told Sister Maddie that I was going to use her as an example this morning. I wanted her to be sweating about it, so I made sure to tell her, and it was no surprise, see, when I, and I'll just do it right off the bat, Sister Maddie, and that way it's over. Years ago, when texting was starting to be something, and people started, I assumed it was with texting, maybe it's something else, I don't know, but people started using, you know, in my little world, which is very small, people started using, I guess you'd call them acronyms. So like for, oh my goodness, OMG, Sister Maddie, the one I remember her teaching me, like say, kind of getting me on that path, was she said to me, TMI, and I'm, what are you talking about? And she said, it's too much information. And so I continued on. You know, my normal way is, why stop there when you're, you know, knee deep? Let's go ahead and get neck deep. And then she goes, whoa, WWTMI, you know, way too much information. So I was thinking about this morning what I want to talk about, and it's the mighty God. So I took from that TMG. I'm going to start a new one. TMG, the mighty God. You know, we've got, what is it, MTG, Mary or Marjorie Taylor Greene, MTG. I don't, that, you know, that has its own context and world. I'm not, well, I don't want to go there. We've got OMG for oh my goodness, or maybe the other way that's disrespectful in my thinking. And T, too much information, TM. Yeah, I get it. See, I'm getting all mixed up. That's why I can't use these things. But maybe we can remember TMG, the mighty God. And, of course, where'd I get that? As you all know, we've been working out of Isaiah 9:6 for quite some time. And we'll just read it again quick. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Did you see TMG in the middle of that? The Mighty God. Now, while I was studying on this, it really kind of struck me interesting how you can read something over and over. I've read this verse right here in this pulpit four other times because there's five things here that says that he shall be called. And this is the last one I'm using out of those five. Why I didn't take them in order, I have no idea. It's just the way it happened. But here we are, and it wasn't till I was studying this time on this idea of the mighty God, or TMG, that I noticed something up above. I mean, I've read it and read it and read it and read over it. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. Who's the us? Is it us? I hope so. I hope so. But maybe we should think in a broader sense. You know, I don't know in here, Isaiah, this is prophecy. I'm sure that at the time this was written, that the Jewish nation felt like they were the us, or the Israelite nation. And I think that's probably a good thing. And I think we can say that also. And especially it still can apply to us through that line of thinking, because what is the Israelite nation a picture of? But God's chosen people. It's a physical picture here on earth to show the spiritual picture of the choosing that God did before the foundation of the world. And he looked down through time and he chose those that he loved. A vast number of people out of all, from Adam to the very last, God chose before the foundation of the world. In that everlasting covenant, there's the picture, unto us. I like personalizing it. It's unto me. You know, when I get up here and I'm trying to preach to y'all, I want it to be personal to you. I also want it to be personal to me. I want to feel it. I remember Brother Don talking about it, our first pastor, Brother Michael, Brother Don Ferris, and he would talk about, we have a lot of this stuff in our head, and we understand Jesus is Lord, but I want to feel it. I want it, he would say, drop 18 inches. I want it to be really personal. I want it in my heart that when I think and talk about Jesus Christ, you can just feel that you know you're a sinner and you know that this man loved you before the foundation of the world and did what was necessary, taking on your sin, taking it personally. You remember I've talked about the black books. He took your black book, gave you his white book, and he took it into his business. We were in Christ, our sinfulness, and he paid for it. He was made sin, yet without sin. We're not going to call him a sinner. That's not the way it was. How that worked, that's God's business. I don't quite understand. But he was made sin for us, and God poured out his wrath on that sin that was ours, and Jesus took it on. We couldn't bear under it. We could not bear under it. And here he's paid for it. So that's personal. That's making it personal to us. Unto us a son is given. Unto us a child is born. Well, it's interesting that we're talking about child and son. That has what kind of ties to it? When Elaine and I found out that we were expecting Stephen or Josh or Jeremy, and we're like, a son is coming. Of course, in those days we didn't know what it was, is a boy or girl, but unto us a child has been given. It's coming. Unto us. It was Elaine and I when Jeremy was there and we would say the us is coming, it'd be the four of us, Josh and Stephen and Elaine and I. Unto us, a child is coming and giving. It's a family discussion. You see what I'm saying? It's not unto them. It's not somebody else. It's unto us. And the us is not, I want it to be personal, but at the same time, when we're talking about a child and a son, we're talking family. Isn't that beautiful? The family of God has a son that's coming. He's come. And he's been blessed for us to know what's going on. I think of Hebrews chapter 2 when I think of this. You all have heard me say it 100 times, and now it's going to be 101. I love this aspect. Like I say, I love the personal part of it. And it says in Hebrews 2:11, for both he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all of one. Both he that sanctifieth, Jesus Christ, he's the one that sanctified us. And they that are sanctified, that's us. We're the ones being sanctified. Both he that sanctifieth and they that are sanctified, it's putting us together. Do you see that? He that sanctifieth and they that are sanctified are all of one. In other words, we come forth from that. I'm the youngest son of Harold Habgewocks. There's four of us boys, and we are all of one. I was blessed to go be with my brothers a couple weeks ago, and we just had a blessed time together. But we are all of one, Harold Habgewocks, the three of us. My three brothers and I. Here it's saying that Jesus and all of those chosen are all of one, of God the Father. Let's read on. So that makes us brethren, does it not? Well, look at the very next part. For which cause he, the one that sanctified us, or Jesus Christ, is not ashamed to call us brethren. I mean, we've heard it said, it's talked about in the scriptures, that he's our elder brother. And here it is, it's spelling it out. Jesus is our brother. We're family, isn't it? It's we're part of the family. It's not like, ooh, I wish I'd be in that family. Well, even in that aspect, this is more of the viewpoint of being born into the family. There's the aspect of being adopted into the family. The scriptures use both aspects as far as getting us into the family. It's two ways of expressing something that needs two ways to express it. And I won't go into that right now. Look what all it says there in verse 12. So here's Jesus Christ now, our brother. And he's saying, I will declare thy name. Jesus is saying, I will declare my Father's name. I will declare our Father's name unto my brethren. Jesus is going to tell us about our Father, his Father and our Father. And where's it going to be? In the midst of the church will I sing praise unto thee. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Is that not comforting? If you're beat up out in this world and just feel like, you know, it's just been a rough week, and maybe it was the physical things around you, or maybe you were struggling with the sin that lies within each of us that just torments our soul. You realize we all have a soul, a precious thing of God. When you're born again, you're blessed with this spiritual soul, and it's perfect. And it will remain perfect within you. It cannot sin because it's of God. That's the part of you that you're the son or sons and daughters of God. It's in a generic sense, but that's, and we have this soul, and that soul, I always say it's down in us. I don't know, but in my thinking, that soul is in there, and it's hungering for righteousness. That's what feeds the soul. The soul, I think, kind of has a window screen or a filter on it. And when we do the junk that maybe we do or think about, or maybe even when we're listening to a sermon that may not have 100% truth in it, our soul feeds on the good part, and I think it can't even hear the bad part. I don't know. Maybe that's a wrong way to look at it. But our soul certainly filters out the stuff. It only feeds on the good stuff. It only feeds on, thus saith the word of God. And when a minister is blessed to preach in a way that is soul satisfying, shall we say it that way? It feeds your soul. I want my soul fed. What about you? My soul hungers. I want to be close to my elder brother. And here we are in the church, and he's declaring our Father's name in the church, his Father and our Father. So, well, all that being said, that was right there above what I've been talking about. For unto us a child is born, a son is given unto us. And then you go even the next part, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. Well, what government? What are you talking about? Well, I immediately go back. You remember we had the series on the kingdom of God and the kingdom of heaven? Well, I'd say if we're talking about a kingdom, there's probably some rules and regulations within the kingdom, and I think the kingdom is that government. And it's on his shoulders. He's the one that determines who will be feasting that day. You know, I've sat in a congregation much like this, and I could look around the room, and you could tell the people by the preaching of the gospel or the singing of the hymns, and folks were being fed. Their souls were being fed. You could see it in their expressions. And I've sat kind of like right over there, and I'm cold. I wasn't being fed. This kingdom is God's business of who comes in and who goes out. And I think we have certainly a aspect that we have control over, part of whether we enter that kingdom or not. Certainly the scriptures talk about those that do all of those abominable works, and they're spelled out like in Galatians 5. And it says, though that do such deeds will not enter the kingdom of heaven. You're not going in. And so if your week's been filled with all this garbage and you come to church Sunday morning expecting to be lifted into the kingdom of heaven, it can happen. I'm not saying it's going to totally exclude it, because God can be merciful and he's a God of mercy. And I've experienced that aspect of it. But it's not as likely. Shall we say it that way? But if we've been trying all week and just saying, God, I know I'm a sinner. I know I'm a mess. It's like King David talking over there in 2 Samuel, and he says, although my house be not so with God, I know I'm a mess, God. And even me as a, I'm talking as if I was King David, and even as me as a father, and David was a horrible father. His children did abominable things. You just go read what his children did. It's just not good. David could have been talking about himself as my house be not so with God, or maybe my house is family's not so with God. Yet he hath made with me an everlasting covenant. God still, in spite of who we are, in spite of what we are, his grace just comes in and overrides it all out of his love to us. So yes, we can live, shall we say, like the devil through the week and still be blessed on Sunday. But it's so much better if we try to understand who God is, what God is, who our elder brother is, read his word, and try and ask for strength to turn from our wicked ways. And then when we come in this place all through the week, praying, God bless us. You know, we say, come, that you would come and dwell with us. God's already here. Maybe we should say, and I know, it doesn't matter how you say it, God understands, but that his presence would be manifest to us, that our elder brother, as he's singing the praise of God in the church, and the church isn't this room, it's in the church, it's us, that he's singing his praise to us. He's singing the praises of his Father to his brethren and sisters about our Father. It's just, you just can't get better than that. And the government's on his shoulder. So now we come down to these sayings here of what his name shall be called. I don't know. Maybe they called him Wonderful as he walked along. I rather think it was more just Jesus in my way of thinking. Emmanuel, maybe he was called that along the way. I think this is more an aspect of showing us different aspects of his character. And it's just awe-inspiring, wonderful. Elaine and I were on the way to church this morning, and Elaine's just saying, it's just so amazing to me who she said, I am. I know who I am and the sinner that I am, and that he died for me on the cross. She was having one of those kingdom experiences as we come to church, and she was just in awe of it, in wonder. Her soul was full of wonder. His name shall be called Wonderful. That's what we're talking about. Wonderful. Your soul fills up with wonder of who this man is. We use the word wonder too frivolously maybe in this life. My understanding is in the Old Testament with the children of Israel, the word, whatever the Jewish word for wonder was, that it was only used in connection with God. They kept that word special. So when they said wonder or wonderful, it was like maybe we say awe. You know, I remember when I walked up to the Grand Canyon the first time when I was 13, it was just like, whoa, that's a crack in the ground. You know what I mean? Well, this is so much bigger than that. This is Jesus Christ, our brother. And then it talks about him being Counselor, another aspect. If I'm needing something, how about y'all? Do y'all need anything along the way? Maybe you're better than I am, but there's times I need somebody smarter than me to give me some counsel. And with a counselor and somebody being counseled, the counselor has to have the knowledge of whatever the problem is that one being counseled needs. And so there needs to be knowledge of the one being counseled. And then here's the counselor needs to understand, well, how much better can it get? We have the God of the universe, Jesus Christ, as the counselor. He knows us. He even knows the number of hair on our head. And when you combed your hair this morning, he knows how many fell out. He knows you implicitly. Is that the right word? Explicitly. I don't know. It's both. I don't know. He knows you. Okay. I need to get my dictionary out. Anyway, y'all get the message. He knows us. And he knows every situation ever from before the foundation of the world till past the end of time. He knows it all. When he says, verily, verily, a number of times in the scriptures, he talks about verily, verily. That means truly, truly. How can I say something is truly, truly? If I do, it's only in the small little realm of how I understand whatever that little bit of thing is. Maybe I'm doing a little bit of woodwork and it's with some white oak. And I say truly about something. It's just that little expert, a bit that I might have a little bit of knowledge about. And I say truly, you know, it's hard to stain or something like that. But when Jesus says truly, he knows about every situation, every aspect of everything, and how it all interacts in the past, how it all interacts with everything else in the present, and how it will ever interact in the future. He understands. Does he know your situation? Oh my goodness, yes. And he knows it all, and he knows your situation. What a counselor. And then we come to the mighty God. You know, at first I was like, it's interesting. Why would it put Jesus up as the mighty God? I know that. I've been, you know, I can't remember a time in my life as young as I can think, and maybe even put a date on it, that I didn't love God. I can't think of a time that it's ever been the other way for me. Some people have different experiences. It's all okay. We have each of our own. But Jesus to me has always been God. I've never thought of him otherwise. But maybe as we go along and we hear a lot about Jesus, maybe if I lived by the Grand Canyon and every morning when I got my cup of coffee and went out on the front porch and looked at the Grand Canyon, maybe it would lessen in its awesomeness. You know what I mean? Maybe if we live around Jesus so much, it loses a little bit. Maybe he's Jesus, and yeah, we go on about our daily lives. He is the mighty God. It could have just said he is the God. But it says mighty. It gives you a greater understanding. It's just amazing. He's the mighty God. Powerful, powerful. I don't know how to explain all of it. How do you explain it? You look up the word God in the Bible, and what do you find? Anybody ever done that? Not in the Bible, in the dictionary. Look up God in the dictionary. I did this when I was 8 years old, and it just kind of blew me away. It says power. It's just power. The mighty God. Here's the really powerful power. The mighty God. Well, I know also in a sense as we go along in this life, I run into people from time to time that think that Jesus was created. That maybe I ran into it. Some folks talked to me about it. When we was on this trip out west, and they said that they had heard it said that when God said, let there be light, and Jesus says, I am the light, that when God said, let there be light, and the creation was filled with light that very first day, that light was Jesus Christ. In other words, that was the first created thing. Interesting thought, isn't it? That is abominable, in my estimation. We'll look at it in a little bit. Other people think that God was, Jesus was always the Word from ever, but it wasn't until he was born again that he became the Son of God. Well, I think we got another serious problem here. And I'm not going to delve into those things. That's not my purpose this morning. But he is, this aspect that instead of wonderful, instead of counselor, instead of Prince of Peace, he's the mighty God. All right? Let's take a little bit of look at maybe what that could mean. We'll run over to, if you want to go with me, to 1 John. John, the first chapter of the Gospel of John. Otherwise, you might go to one of the epistles of John, and that's not what we want. The first chapter of the Gospel of John. And it's the first three verses. It's just, I mean, it is so clear in my thinking here. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Can't get any more simple than that. In the beginning, well, you know, what is that? Well, I'd say that's at least when God said there was darkness on the face of the deep, and he said in the beginning. How's that go? All of a sudden, my brain forgot how those first words are, so we'll look quick. I'll get there. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was out form and void, and darkness on the face beat, and the Spirit of God moved on the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. In the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. I'd say that's before anything happened, before there was anything being created. And if that's the case, then I think we're talking about what some people refer to as eternity past. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. So whatever this Word is with God, and the Word was God. Man, it's just so simple. You can't, to me, you have to have help to misunderstand that. Is what that is. But you go on and read. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made. That verse 3 tells us in two aspects, from the positive and from the negative. You know, you get a glass half full of water, and some folks look at it as half full. Other folks look at it as half empty. Well, it's what we're doing here. All things were made by Him. Positive. He made it all. The negative side of it is, and without Him was not anything made that was made. You can't get around it. He was there, and He made it all. So how could He be the created light? He can't be. He created the light, so He can't be the created light. Does that make sense to you? Because He is what? TMG. The mighty God. Jesus Christ. It's so beautiful to me. Well, let's do one other maybe like this. Hebrews 13 and 8. I think that's it. I looked this up as Marty was standing up here saying I was going to speak today. So I'm a little intrepid that maybe I got the wrong one. But we'll see. Yeah, that is not it. No, I was in 12. So let's try 13:8. Yes, 13:8 of Hebrews. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday and today and forever. Who else can say that but God? The same. It talks about God that He's immutable. All right? We're mutable. What does that mean? We change. I saw a picture of somebody sent me a picture of when I was first moved to North Carolina. 40-some years ago, I've changed. Yeah, I don't look the same. I've changed. I'm mutable in the aspect that one day I might be trustworthy, and the next day I'm so mad at the world and upset that God hasn't done things that I wanted Him to do, and you just might find me quite, just leave Him alone. You know, let's don't get around. We change is in who we are. We're mutable. God is immutable. As He said there, Jesus the same yesterday and today and forever. He's always been and He's always will be. You know, deity cannot be made, and deity is self-existent. So there's no, He's just God. He is the mighty God. It's more than just power. It's the mighty power of God. It should be awe-inspiring to us that He is God. So that's kind of the bigger picture. I want to start bringing it down a little bit closer to us. So as we come along, there's prophecies about Jesus. Well, that's what we're just reading, that he's the a child given and a child born and a son given. That's prophecy of Jesus coming. There's another place in Isaiah, it talks about, behold, a virgin shall conceive and bring forth a son. That's a sign. I mean, some of the newer versions of the Bible, I've looked at that, and it says, a young girl shall conceive. That says it. What kind of a sign is that? That happens every day on planet Earth, every day. But this says, a virgin shall conceive. It's a miracle. This is not ordinary. It's a sign. What about Lazarus when Jesus walked up to that tomb? And Martha and Mary say, or Martha says, behold, he stinks. He's decomposing, Lord. Why are you rolling this stone away? If you'd have been here, you could have kept him from dying. But he's dead now. It's over. It's done. We can't fix it. Jesus tells her, I'm the resurrection. And he brings him back to life. He says, Lazarus, come forth. The mighty God. Well, what else could we have? What about, you know, here, there we see he had power over death. You remember when Jairus came to him and said, Lord, you need to come to my house. My daughter is really bad sick, and you need to heal her. And so they're heading. Jesus says, I'll come with you. And they're going down the road. And you remember the woman with the issue of blood. And she comes up and touches his hem of his garment. And there's a throng of people bumping into him, around him. And he goes, who touched me? And the disciples go, Jesus, are you crazy? There's all kinds of people touching you. Why are you saying, who touched me? Well, think about it. Over here on the edge of the crowd is Jairus. And he's like, come on, Jesus, get this show on the road. We don't have time here. My daughter's sick. In fact, some servants came and told the Jairus, trouble the master no more. Your daughter's dead. She's died. What do you think? Do you think he had anger maybe in his heart that Jesus didn't hurry it up and get there faster? I think that's highly possible. What is the steps of grief? I know anger is one of them. Whatever the others are, he may have had those things grieving. His daughter's dead, and Jesus didn't get there fast enough. Yet Jesus says, let's go on. We'll go there, because she just sleeps. Do you realize death to God is like sleep to you and me? And I can wake up, I can walk up to any of you that are asleep and wake you up. I can do that. I have that power. It's the same with Jesus when you're dead in the grave or dead in a casket laying here, and all he has to do is just come up and say, arise. Lazarus, come forth. The power over death. What else do we have? Well, there was one time Jesus says, let us go to the other side. They entered a ship, and Jesus got back in the back of the ship, found a pillow, and laid his head on it and went to sleep. And a great storm arose, and this ship's going, and they've got fishermen, sailors on this boat. And it was so bad that the sailors thought, we're going to die. I mean, this has got to be a serious storm. And right in there in those scriptures, it talks about, and there were other little ships with them. So there's a lot of folks out here on ships, and it must be some kind of serious storm, to where they finally go to Jesus and say, do you not care that we perish? Wake up. You know, get up. And he gets up and he rebukes the storm and he says, peace be still. We sang that song a little bit ago, didn't we? That song's talking about our lives, you know, when you have the storm in your life. He can calm the sea to the point they marveled, full of wonder, that even the storms and the wind and the waves obey his command. Full of wonder. He has power over the elements. There was a man that was really wondering, is this Jesus Christ or is this not Jesus Christ? And I don't really know who he is. And his name was Nathanael. And he comes to Jesus and he's doubting. And Jesus says, Nathanael, I saw you before you came to me while you were sitting under the fig tree. Nathanael's like, whoa, here, wait a minute. He wasn't there. How'd you know this? And Nathanael realizes that God has is all-seeing. You see what I mean about God? You see these things we're talking, these different aspects of TMG, the mighty God. We're seeing aspects of him. And here he is. He's all-seeing. Nathanael is shocked by it and believes in him. What about the Pharisees when they come up and they're in their minds, oh, we're going to trick him this time. We got questions that's going to trip him up, I guarantee you, going to get him. And they'd ask their questions, but guess what? Jesus already knew their minds. He already knew what they were thinking. And he already had all the answers and knew all the aspects of it. I won't go to any of them. I could. I don't see the point right now. But Jesus is all-knowing. He got to the other side one time into the land of the Gergeses, I believe is the name of it. And there met him there a man out of the tombs. And his name was Legion. Why was his name Legion? Because he had many devils in him. And they had tried to chain him. And apparently the devils gave him a little bit of superhuman strength, and he had broke the chains. And he lived amongst the tombs, and he wasn't dressed properly, and he was just a mess. And yet it's interesting that it says that he met Jesus. And Jesus cast the devils out of him. There was 1,000, and they went into a bunch of pigs there. And the pigs ran violently down a hill and into the sea and were choked and killed, is what happened to him. Do you not see here? Jesus, this man, the mighty God, TMG, has power over evil spirits. Praise be to God. He has power over evil spirits. Well, I think about these things, that he has power over death, power over the elements. He's all-seeing, all-knowing, and he has power even over evil spirits. And I think about when he's doing these miracles. Well, there were miracles done before in Israel. We think of the time of Moses. There was a lot of things that happened there, was there not? That were showing the people kind of who God was. And then we get to maybe Elijah and Elisha and the miracles that they did. Those miracles were somewhat limited, though, to a certain number and maybe a certain power. We get to Jesus Christ, and he kind of, what I would say, blows the lid off of how many miracles are being done. How do we know that? I mean, we read in scriptures. I looked up, and there was, I think, Elisha did the most miracles at like 37. And it says that Jesus, written in the scriptures, if you know, there's some that are in several gospels, but it's the same miracle. And so they added them all up, and it was 38. Well, you know, one more than the other. Maybe that wouldn't convince you that this is the mighty God. But let's go to the last book of the Gospel of John and the last two verses. And I'm wrong, it's the second to last. John 20, verses 30 and 31. Verse 30 says, "And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book." Many other signs did Jesus, but they're not written in the book. There's another place that John writes, and he says, if all the things Jesus had done and were written in books, the world itself could not contain the books. It's just, you know, we can't understand it. Our minds go, you know, the old pinball machines we used to play, and you get a little crazy with that thing and shake it too much, and it goes tilt. Well, that's what our minds do. It's just like thinking, ooh, can't get there anymore. It's just so much. Our brains can't compute it. Many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples. So what I'm saying is they had those other people that was recorded that had done miracles. But here comes this man, Jesus. And if they thought of him just as a man, what he's doing with his miracles is way beyond what the other men did. It's signs. It's what it says right there, many other signs. These miracles were signs. And what was the signs for? To show he's not just a man doing miracles. He's the Son of God. He is the mighty God. It's what he was showing. I am the mighty God, and it's through these signs that he's showing. Well, let's read on. Many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written, some of the ones I just read to you, these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and can I interject? The mighty God. These signs were there for a reason. All of this stuff we just read about, this just incredible in our mind. Would you not have liked to have been there when he told Lazarus to come out of the grave? And here's Lazarus wrapped in the grave clothes that had him wrapped up. He couldn't walk. He couldn't use his arms. He's wrapped up like a cocoon. And it says that he came up, and Jesus turned to the others there and said, "Loose him and let him go." In other words, he's alive in there, but he needs to be unwrapped to get going so he can go. What a miracle. Can you imagine that? What about the miracle the boy brings those fish and those loaves of bread? And I don't think those were fish. I kind of think these loaves were small, and he had some you know, bigger than a sardine. This was a boy's lunch, is kind of how I look at it. I don't think it was much more than lunch. Maybe it was lunch and dinner put together, is what this boy had. And Jesus takes it and feeds 5,000 men plus the women and children, multiplies it. What a sign. What a sign. Do you see what we're talking about? It's these signs that are out there, and they're written that we might believe. These signs are written that we might believe that he is, Jesus is the Christ. In other words, he is the anointed one. He is the one from God. He is the mighty God. It's what we're trying to see. This is a picture. Jesus is not just a man. Jesus is not the best man that ever lived on earth and did a lot of good stuff. Because if that's the case, when he says that I am the Lord, I am God, Jesus said one time, he that has seen me has seen the Father. Well, if he's not God and he says that, that's a pretty big boast, isn't it? Is that a good man that goes around boasting like that? I don't think so. I would put that guy pretty low on my list. I think this is God. I am the Lord, I change not. Well, these things are written that you might believe. And, read on, that believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And like I say, I interject, the mighty God. And that believing you might have life through his name. Now, I know what a lot of other denominations take this verse to say. That if you believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, then you'll get eternal life. But we understand that that's not what this talks about. We look at it in a different sense. And besides that, the apostle here is not talking to the world at large. He's talking to, well, who is he talking to? Is it the unto us a son is given? Unto us a child? He's talking to the family. That's who Jesus is talking to here. Well, actually, John. And John said, but many other signs truly did Jesus do. Many other signs your elder brother did. Why did Jesus do these signs? So that you believing, that you might believe that this truly is Jesus the Christ. He did these signs that you, so there's no doubt in your mind, no doubt in my mind, that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus is the mighty God. There's no doubt in our minds. That's why it is. And that believing that, we might have life. Well, there's such a thing in my thinking of having life or living and having life and living. Do you get the irony of that I'm trying to say there? Yes, I can just go through life mundanely. I can get up in the morning, you know, find a crust of bread to eat maybe somewhere, smear a little honey on it or butter or something, and whatever, while my hours away through the day, and look for night to fall so I can get to sleep, and one more day has gone by. That's living. I mean, there's a life in that. Or maybe we could step it up a bit, and you're just, boy, you're just really enjoying life out there. And maybe your thing is to collect stuff. You know, I used to collect coins, and every time I got change, I made sure to look at the coins I got in my pocket. Now, I had a better time than most of y'all would have. Back in the 60s when I was doing this, up until 64, all the coins were silver. And 65, they started pulling the silver coins out, but I kept collecting coins. You could still just make change and get silver coins, and I just, every time, I pulled those silver coins out. You could still go to the bank and plunk down 10 bucks and get 10 silver dollars. I had, well, until 60. Till the beginning of 65. But anyway, I collected coins. I was doing it. It really kind of started consuming my mind just in that one aspect. But we can start collecting stuff, whether it's physical stuff or just stuff that just really interests us and we're just out doing that thing. And that, you know, that you can have, you can like, wow, I've enjoyed today. This has been a great day, all this stuff I've done. Or maybe it's in other things that you're, some people just like to go to, and I don't know what, just go do stuff, shall we say that, just exciting yourselves. I know people like, you see an RV go past you down the interstate, and they've got, that they're trying to go to every federal land reserve or whatever. What am I trying to say? National park. Thank you. Tough words there. National park. And are trying to get to everyone. I mean, they're filling their life with that. Well, or some people, they get one degree and they say, well, I'm going to get another degree, and they get another degree, and by the time they're 50-something before they get out of college, and they've got all these degrees hanging on the wall. Inherently, there's nothing wrong with that. Please understand, if some of you are involved in some of that, I'm not knocking the doing of that if it's kept in the right perspective. You know, when I am going to have surgery on me, I want my surgeon to have at least a good degree in what he's done. You know what I'm saying? I don't want the surgeon that had a D in surgery class, and he went to the teacher, and she gave him a makeup, extra credit on something, so he got that C-, and he became a surgeon. I don't want that guy. Thank you very much. I want the one that's, maybe went and got two or three more degrees, right? You see what I'm saying? Getting in degrees is not, it's not, I don't, or going and gathering coins or crossing the nation for the state parks and the national parks and all that stuff. It's where your mind is at in all of this stuff. Is in the doing of it, you're really not living in what this is talking about. So then there's living. Well, what is that? It's being in fellowship with Jesus Christ. And so when we think of that you believe that ye, these things are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ. That is so, that elevates you to, above this other stuff in the world. That elevates your thinking of who you are or what makes you happy. It elevates you to see what Jesus has done for you. And maybe then in turn, you'll see that Jesus lowered himself to become a man and lowered himself that he says, I came not to minister or to be ministered unto, but I came to minister. That then we maybe could look like Jesus Christ out ministering to others. That's life. That's real life. There's a satisfaction that you get when you help somebody. There's a satisfaction you can get when you go to the hospital and visit somebody in the hospital. The one in the hospital receives great joy in that somebody's thought of me and come, and what a blessing it is. But the satisfaction of that you've gone, God blesses when we minister to people. You remember when Jesus divided the sheep from the goats? And the goat said, hey, Lord, look at all these great things we've done. And he says, depart from me, I never knew you. And he turns to the others and said, and he blessed them for the things they were doing. And they're like, when did we do these things? And or unto thee? And he says, whenever you've done it to the least of my little ones, you've done it unto me. You see, ministering is a way of living. It's the opposite of what's really in this world and gets in our heads. Ministering is showing a Jesus Christ aspect that we're following him and we're Christians and we're doing. And that, so here's the other, well, what about believing? I heard this by what I'd call a radio preacher this week. And he said, I believe that George Washington was the father of our nation. He said, it's a fact. And I truly, totally, 100% believe it. What good is that going to be to me when I get cancer? What good is that going to me when I, I'm facing bankruptcy? What good is that to me when a loved one of mine is in a bad car wreck and they're on their way to the hospital? That I believe in George Washington. Is that going to give you life? It's a fact. It may be a good thing to know what George has done for us and our nation and the aspects of it. But it doesn't give you life. But in the reading and understanding of the signs that Jesus did, it's not the signs. That's not the issue, is it? It's not those miracles is not the issue. What's the issue? What were all those signs showing? They're signs. What are they pointing to? Jesus. They're pointing to who? The mighty God. To TMG. I get it right. I say it wrong. They're pointing to him. It's who they're after. It's what it is. And in believing in him, You can have life. You can. There's a peace that passes all understanding. The Apostle Paul tells us in Philippians, there's a peace that passes all understanding. I've experienced that peace a time or two in my life. There were things that I didn't understand how this is going to work out, Lord. And it seemed like my life was just in this shambles. How is this going to work out? And I tried to beg God to give me strength and help along the way. And God, in His so merciful way, and it's not, I don't want you to think every time I get into trouble, I pray to God and I get my peace. The Lord is sparing. It's so that you don't think you got God figured out. It's part of it, okay? But God just in His beautiful way comes in. And the turmoil really was still going. It's kind of like when we talked last week about Prince of Peace. Here's the turmoil, but when you're trusting in God and looking up, you're over your turmoil. You're passing over. You're transcend. I love that word with it. You're transcending your turmoils. Turmoil still may go on, but then there's this peace that passes the understanding of how all this is going to work out. And God's blessed me with that. And so here, when I believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and that He is God, He is the Christ, He's the Son of God, He's the mighty God, and that believing you might have life. There's this life out there, folks, that it transcends, we'll use that word again, anything that we can muster up on our own here on earth. And there's some good life here on earth. I don't want to say it isn't. But when you add Jesus Christ to the mix in your life, it goes so much better. It transcends whatever the pain is, whatever the heartache is, whatever the struggle is. It transcends it. The mighty God. And in believing, you might have life through His name. And what did we say over? And His name shall be called the Mighty God. I love this. I've loved this talking on these things out of that His name shall be called, and those five things, wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. There's many other things. You know, it says in there that His name shall be called Emmanuel, God with us. They say there's some four, I think the word's appellations, that not like the mountains. Maybe I said that wrong. There's 50 some that apply to Jesus. I may look at some more of those in the future, as we've done, kind of in a continued series. I don't know. Y'all pray for me. I appreciate your attention so much this morning. And just God bless each and every one of you. Look at those signs. See that it's pointing to who? The mighty God. And your life, you'll have life. In this life. Does that make sense? God bless you all.